is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, check out these great deals this July from our partners and friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. Get $4,000 off any machine in their professional lineup or $1,000 off the Dr. Dish home machine. Their Dr. Dish shooting machines are undoubtedly the most advanced and user-friendly machines on the market. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Matthew Radebard, author of Lead Like a Pro, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Prepare like the pros with the all-new Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Fast Draw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off Fast Draw and Fast Scout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klinzing here with my co-host Jason Sunkel tonight. And we are pleased to welcome back for the second edition of the Triple Double, Rob Brost from Bolingbrook High School. Rob, welcome to the Hoopheads pod.
Man, it's great to be back on. I love the segment. Love what you guys do. I'm glad Jason made it.
It's a triple.
To this one, because yes, he missed the first one. We'll give him a pass.
Was it because I just had a kid? Was that the problem?
No, like, no. We just did this, man. Where have you been? We just did this a month ago, man. No, come on. You were on vacation or something. Who knows what you were doing?
I was in Tennessee.
Yeah, you might have been. I don't know. You were somewhere. I don't know. Who knows?
How old's your baby, Jason? I didn't get that.
I've got four kids, Rob.
Oh,
I've got a nine-year-old, a six-year-old, a three-and-a-half-year-old. Today's her three-and-a-half birthday, and then I have a 15-month-old. So I got the gamut.
Okay. Well, that'll keep you busy for sure.
That will definitely keep
you
busy.
Do I get a pass, Rob?
Yes. I was just giving you a
pass. Well, Mike's not going to give you a pass. So
no, man, I'm not going to give you a pass. You don't even know what episodes we're putting out, man. I got to get on you about that. All right.
That's right.
Topic number one, Rob. You just got back recently from Italy, despite the fact that you're now in Florida, but you did just get back from
Are you ever in Illinois, Rob?
Well, I did a quick clinic for the Arkansas Coaches Association.
So the answer is no. Okay.
Flew right back, and then I went to Italy, and now I'm in Florida. So, always on the move, always happy to take time out for the Hoopheads podcast. That's for sure.
All right. So tell us about the Italy trip. Tell us, first of all, how you get the opportunity, and then tell us a little bit about what you were able to do over there.
Yeah, this is the second year that I've been able to do the Airness Academy camp. It's the biggest camp in Italy. My son has gone with me both times. He's going to be a sophomore in high school. So Trey and I flew directly from Chicago to Milan, about a 10-hour flight. And then we drive up into the Alps, almost into Switzerland. So actually to a little town called Bormio. Actually, some of the downhill skiing in the 2026 Olympics is going to be held right in Bormio where we were. So it's a great camp. We had about 160 kids the week that I was there. And they have it for multiple weeks. I think it's 4 or 6 weeks that they have a camp, and they'll have anywhere between 125 and 200 kids, depending on which week it is. And so I've been fortunate enough to go last year and this year to return again. And it's a great opportunity, not only for me, but for my son. And then I think it's a great opportunity for those kids in Italy to get exposed to some of the way we do things here in America, And it's a great experience. They have an interpreter there for me, a driver, and they really treat me very, very well. So it's been a really, really great experience, not only for me, but my son as well. And then obviously for the kids that are there, because they asked me back and they've already asked me back for next year. So we're looking forward to doing it a third time.
How did the opportunity get to you in the first place? So how do you get the chance to go over there and be a part of that?
Yeah, I think how it actually occurred was, they contacted some of the guys, some of the folks at USA Basketball, and said they had the camp. What coaches do you recommend? And for whatever reason, Coach Showalter and some of the guys at USA Basketball recommended that they call me. Of course, when an opportunity like that comes up, you jump at it. It's I thought it was going to be a once in a lifetime opportunity. It is a once in a lifetime opportunity, and getting to do it year two and now hopefully year three next year has been a blessing. And I've developed some really lifelong friendships already from just the short time that I've been over there. And they do a really good job with the camp, and they also do a good job of bringing in coaches from all across, the world, actually. Some U.S. coaches, some coaches from Spain came the week before, and some top Italian coaches were there the week that I was going to leave as well. So they do a really good job overall with the camp.
Where do the kids come from? Are those local kids? Are those kids that are coming in from all over the country? How do they get the campers?
Yeah. They come from all over Italy. So some of the kids fly in to Milan and then get bused to Bormio. Some of the kids are local, obviously, but they come from all over. And so the camp actually runs a Sunday to a Saturday. And then they use Saturday night kind of to regroup and kind of get ready for the next week of campers. They're from all over Italy. I was fortunate enough to work with some of the same kids that were there year one. So we actually got to build on some of the things that we did on year one with some of the kids. And so, it's really a unique experience. Some of the courts are outside because it's up in the Alps, so it doesn't get very warm up there. And by very warm, I'm talking like during the day, it's 70, 75 degrees. And at night, it's down to 50 or so degrees. And then they have several indoor courts as well. So the camp is all over the town of Bormio, but it's a fairly tight town, so you can get everywhere you need to get to within walking distance.
Is there a coach or multiple coaches that you have maybe felt connected to in the last year or two that when you've been over there, you've really gotten a chance to get to know and pick their brain and learn from?
Yeah, I think that goes both ways. They, Italian coach named Marcello, connected with him this past year. And then another coach who's one of the heads of the camp, Guido, I've been really fortunate to develop some friendships with them, and we stay in touch probably every other week or so. We stay in touch with each other. And so, I did a mini clinic for all their coaches as well on Wednesday night, and that we were planning for about an hour, and that ended up being about a 3-hour, event, which is great because they're so hungry for knowledge and they're thirst for knowledge, not only the coaches, but the kids as well. I did two question and answers with the kids, and the one with the older kids went almost 2 hours, and some just great questions, great follow-ups, all of those things. So it's been a really, really unique experience, but invaluable for my development as a coach. And then also for my son to be a part of it too. It's a lot better when I describe drills and then I can have Trey do them rather than the fat, bald 50-year-old, washed up coach from, the USA. So, Trey has developed a bunch of friends from there as well. And they think he's, when it's one of the questions I got in the younger kids Q&A, how long before Trey is in the NBA?
Of course.
So,
Trey's a celebrity.
That tells
there.
You. Yeah, it tells you a little bit about what they think about Trey over there. So, and when I said I think it will be very difficult for him to make it to the NBA, some of them were shocked that I would answer like that. So, you know, it's a great experience for sure. And I'm just grateful for the opportunity and grateful for the friendships that I've been able to develop.
What's Trey's favorite part?
I think he likes the relationships as well, but I mean, it's crazy when he walks into the room, like everyone claps. It's unbelievable the following he has,
awesome.
You know, on Instagram. I think the majority of his people that react to what he posts are all Italian kids. So, I mean, by the end of the camp, he's taking pictures, signing autographs. I mean, it's crazy how they have really took to him as well. So, you know, it's like I said, I've used the word invaluable several times, but that's truly what it is.
All right. Last question on this. Yep. Is basketball basketball? In other words, when you're over there and you're working with those Italian kids, and obviously you're doing it through a translator and there's the yep. language barrier, but are you finding that those kids, other than the language barrier, if you were in front of a group of kids from the US, does it work pretty much the same way, or are they processing things or looking at things or approaching things slightly different? Do you notice any difference?
Yeah, I notice a difference, to be honest. They take what you say, and this might be in part because of the language barrier and how the translator is translating what I'm saying, but they take literally what I say completely literal. You know, if I say, hey, we're working on a, you know, click, click, boom, we call it, or an extra pass, they will make the extra pass even if they have a layup. And so the decision-making piece, you know, and this is just the kids I saw in Italy, obviously. I'm not making a general statement about all of European basketball or anything like that. I'm just talking about the kids that I've seen for 2 years over in Italy. They're very well drilled and skilled, but the decision-making piece of it and improvising and making the correct play when it's there, even though that's not what is maybe called for, that part, they're a little bit behind, I would say. If that makes sense.
No, it does.
And so super well drilled, super coachable, super thirsty for knowledge. I mean, the first thing I always say is, if you want to work with me at any time, just let me know. And next thing I know, I have, like, I'm waking up at 7:15 to do lessons with kids, and kids are wanting to come to me over lunch, which is great because that's what I'm there for. But they are just thirsty for knowledge, and they're thirsty for the nuances, I think, that, you know, the American coaches bring, because they don't get a lot of that. And it's shocking. You go to camp over there and you'll see every jersey. I mean, there's a Giannis, there's a Giannis jersey, there's a Luka jersey, there's a Kevin Durant jersey, there's several LeBron jerseys. I mean,
what's the most obscure NBA jersey you've seen?
Whew, man. I asked the kids in one of my sessions, hey, can you name anyone from the NBA that's not playing right now? And I mean the names: Dennis Rodman, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Bill Russell. They know who all these guys are. So as far as obscure names, man, there was, of course, some Sabonis guys. Of course, they know, you know, the lefty from the Spurs, whose name, Manu Ginobili, even though he's from Argentina, he's got some ties to Italy. So they all obviously know him as well. So, that's probably the most popular. And of course they love Luka and they love, Jokic as well, just because they're not American born players.
All right. Topic number two.
Yep.
Both of us are going to take off our coaching hats for this topic.
And I'm going to send this one out since my kid's 9 and under. Yeah. So
Jason's may not be able to participate. He may Jason. Be able, maybe he'll be able to ask us something, but he's not going to be able to participate quite as fully in this question. So topic two is AAU basketball from a parent's perspective. And I guess when I thought about this topic, I'm thinking about what advice would I give to another parent about how to approach AAU basketball. So I'm going to let you go first, and then I'll chime in after you give your two cents here.
It's interesting. We got back from Italy. on a Sunday night / Monday morning, America time. And then on Wednesday, we drove up to Milwaukee. Trey played in a tournament in Milwaukee Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then we came to Florida. So we're just coming off of the whole AAU parent thing with my own son. So obviously, you know, I have a little bit unique perspective because I'm a high school coach as well. But advice to parents would be, A, let your kids be coached is my first bit of advice. And I think that is very difficult on the AAU set for a couple reasons. One is because it's so easy to switch teams if you're not happy or satisfied with the way things are going. Or, you know, even the next day you can switch to a different team. And you know, B, everybody wants instant gratification. And if your son or daughter, whatever the case may be, isn't playing particularly well, it's okay. Especially in AAU, because there's another game either later that day or the next day for sure. And so I would say allow your kids to be coached, number one. And then number two, be patient with that whole process. And then that leads to number three, find a program where your players will actually be coached. I see a lot of teams and even some in our area where they just throw together teams, throw them out there, and they think they're going to get exposure, and all they get is exposed instead of getting exposure. So there's a lot that plays into it, but those are the things, you know, that immediately come to mind.
Yeah, those are all well said. And I'm going to piggyback on a couple of things that you said, and I'm going to start out for young kids. And I think that when you're talking about kids that are younger than high school, especially, to me, I think the most important thing is that wherever you end up, whatever team you end up playing on, that the focus is on the development of the players and not just exactly on trying to win games. And to go along with that, I think ultimately, you know, I have a lot of people that'll come and ask me about, hey, what AAU group should I play with, or should I do this or that? Yep. And ultimately, I mean, the organization is important because the organization controls a lot of the things. But what I always say is you can have a great organization and get a bad coach, or you can have an organization that's maybe not quite as good, but have a great coach and have a really good experience. I think the younger you are, the more important that coach really is in terms of their development. I mean, I think if the coach that you have is focused on developing the players at a young age, then you're in the right spot. You may not be with the IT club, but if the coach that you have is doing a good job, to me, that is hugely, hugely important at a younger age. So that's one thing. And then I think for me, the next thing, so my son's going to be a senior this year, and we've played, I would say, 2 years now. So this year and last year of pretty high level AAU. I mean, we're not on the Adidas circuit. We're not in the EYBL, but we're playing at a pretty high level where everybody on our team, whether or not they end up playing college basketball or not, probably has the ability to. And I would say most of the teams that we're playing against are in that same type of team where you're talking about Division II, Division III players that you're competing against all the time. And what I learned in the last 2 years is if you are one of those types of players, so you're not a high level Division I player that people have identified since the time you were in seventh or eighth grade and people know who you are and you're going to be playing in the EYBL when you're in 10th grade. If you're a player who has aspirations of playing, you're a good high school player, you have aspirations of playing college basketball at the Division II or the Division III level, don't let anyone tell you that you need to be here or there or anywhere in order to get exposure prior to the spring of your junior year. So heading into the AAU season, heading into your senior year, because I can tell you that our team was a pretty good team and we went 37-3 in our schedule last year and nobody was watching us. I mean, there were a few coaches and we were at lots of places where there were lots of coaches. They just were focused on the year ahead of
different
us.
Players.
Yeah, they were focused on the year ahead of us. They were focused on kids who were going to be seniors the following season, which is where we are now, going to be seniors next season. And we have had way, way more coaches sitting and watching our games and talking to our kids and being around it. And so what I would say, what I would warn people of is, if someone is trying to tell you, hey, you need to go and you need to spend a bunch of money and you need to travel all over the place because you're going to get exposure, I've found that not to be true. Now, again, it's different if you're a high-level Division I player, then yep. there are people watching you. But if you are a Division II or Division III player, if you – I mean, again, this requires people to evaluate themselves honestly, which
– No question.
Which I'm not sure a lot of people do. But that being said, I just find the value in – you know, I see these teams that are in like 7th or 8th grade. And look, you want to go on – you want to travel one time with your team to have that experience and have fun and go somewhere out of town. Great, have at it. It's a great experience. I did that with my daughter. This year is going to be in 8th grade. We did one – tournament where we went out of town to Cincinnati. So we traveled 4 hours and played in a tournament and the girls had fun and it was great. But if we had played 6 tournaments out of town and I had spent hotel money every weekend and going out to eat and all the stuff that goes along with it, I don't think that's worth it for my money. I feel like you end up doing things that you're chasing something that you're never going to catch. And so I guess my advice would be, don't chase around the country when your kids are in middle school trying to find exposure, because eventually by the time they finish their junior year and it's that spring of their junior year and they're going to be seniors, that's when, if they're legitimately a college basketball player or potentially a college basketball player, they're going to get an opportunity to play in front of coaches. But anything before that, the coaches might stroll by your court and peek at you for 30 seconds, but they're focused on the year ahead of you. And they just, because way the recruiting goes for Division II and III, they're focused on right now, they're focused on 2024. So if you're a 2025, they're just not watching it. And that's the reality. And I think that so many people have this misconception that if I'm on the road and if I'm in a place where there's coaches, you know, and I'm in 9th grade or I'm in 8th grade, man, these coaches are going to be, they're going to be spotting me in 8th grade. No, they're not, because they're not looking at you. They might walk by your court and make eye contact with you, but it's not because they're interested in you as a prospect. It's just because they happen to be walking by. So that's my two cents.
That's exactly right. Let me just piggyback on that just for one second.
And then I got a question, Rob. I got a question after that. So you'd say your piece and then I got a question.
Yep. No problem. So Trey and I's Italy trip, you know, Trey's going to be a sophomore. So our Italy trip overlapped with the first live period. I think it was the 6th through the 8th or whatever it was of July. We were in Italy and two or three, pretty prominent AAU coaches in the area were like, are you serious? Trey's going to be in Italy? I was like, listen, man, no one is watching Trey Brost right now. Nobody. No person. And if they are, they're just there because I'm his dad. Right. Yep. Like, let's be honest. Okay. And I wouldn't even get him there because I'm his dad. Trey missed out on nothing by missing that period. And he gained so much more in experience and friendship and relationships and culture and all of those other things from Italy than he ever would have having played 5 games during a 2-day period where no one was at his games anyway. So I completely agree with that. And I agree with it to the point where my son missed the live period this year. So at least one of them.
All right. So here's my question, Mike and Rob. Okay. So Mike and I have long talked about AAU Bingo and how it's the greatest, one of the greatest Twitter accounts ever made. And it's in hiatus. Yes. It's gone. It's on. They don't really post anymore. Is that accurate?
No, they don't post anymore.
Okay. What's the craziest thing you've seen at AAU that you want to talk about on the podcast?
I saw this was 2 or 3 years ago. I was up in Wisconsin just watching some of my varsity guys, because I like to go at least to see them once, you know, if I can, if they're around the area. So a coach had literally a dog on the bench with him. And not like one of these holding, and it wasn't like a service dog of any kind, but the dog was with him and went with him and was sitting on the bench with him.
Was this your player's coach?
This was a totally different team. And I was like, before I even made fun of it, I wanted to make sure like this is not some sort of service dog or, you know, or something. And sure enough, it was not. I don't know, but it was a live dog. Like, it wasn't like the dog was on a leash, the whole thing. And like, he would like, I give him credit. The dog was trained pretty well. I mean, it was like laying down kind of not under the bench, but kind of right beside the bench. But then, you know, there would be some like some sort of scuffle or whatever. And then the dog would get up, you know, just stuff like that. So that's the craziest thing. And obviously I've seen the ones where, you know, guys on cell phones during the games. I mean, just all kinds of stuff. That is a great question. I don't think
that's crazy. That's just common things that happen at
age. I've never seen a dog. That's a good.
Mike, you got anything close to that that you want to share or no?
I mean, I don't think I can top the dog. I mean, I'm sure Rob's seen the coach in the full uniform. So
yeah,
I've seen the coach. So the best one I've ever seen is coach in the full uniform, and it was one of those like, you know, neon, pink, yellow, you know, just crazy, crazy color scheme. So in the full uniform with the backpack, with the jewelry. So the bracelet on one hand.
You may have sent me a picture of this.
I may have. The bracelet on one hand, the gold watch on the other, the Mr. T starter kit around the neck. And then their team also had one of the Bluetooth speakers, which in and of itself is, I guess, not enough for 3 minutes of warm up that you can't warm up without your tunes. But it also was one of the ones that like lit up with the neon to match the beat of the song. So the combination of all those things, that's probably the funniest one that I've seen. But it gets crazy. It gets crazy.
I also, and this is not quite an AAU bingo, but I also enjoy the one like, it's a 6th, 7th grade coach, whatever. And for whatever reason, they have 10 or 15 minutes to warm up because the game got over earlier, whatever. And I mean, they are so organized. It is, you can tell they practice this.
Oh, yeah.
And then the game starts and they just get blown out, like, you know, by 40.
Yep.
But their warm-ups are so precise.
That's not even an AU thing. That happens.
That's going to lead into one of my pet peeves for this third question too.
Rob, so. I coach middle school basketball, and I'm going to keep the teams nameless because I coach middle school basketball in case someone listens to the podcast. Fair. But I've seen teams come out, and their warm-ups are the most ridiculous things that I've ever seen in my life, and it has no bearing on the basketball game. And I'm like, you spend time in practice doing this as a clear warm-up. Either, I don't know if it's a warm-up for practice or a warm-up – I was like, you don't do this in a game. You don't do this in any stretch of the imagination. What are you doing this as far? Like, and parents are sitting in the stands watching this. And I'm like, like, if that was my kid out there, I wouldn't scream or I wouldn't do anything because I would be sitting there, but I'd be like, what in the hell are they doing? I'm sorry.
I love it.
All right. So bottom line, don't buy into the exposure and find a coach that is going to coach your kids and then allow all those coaches to coach your kids.
If your coach has a dog on the bench, you should be.
Yeah. If your coach has a dog on the bench, you may you may be a dog lover, but I still think I'd probably go the other direction. If I saw a dog,
ask the coach, like, did he have one of those bags in case the dog went to the bathroom, you know, like the cleanup bag, like is that in his backpack? I didn't know.
The dog can hold it for an hour. Then you got to get out during your break and
get out on the lawn
and just do your business from there. So
that's right. That's right.
Hey, Hoopheads Nation, whether you're a beginner basketball player looking for a place to start or a seasoned vet looking to level up your skills, I want to tell you about your new go-to secret weapon. It's called Train. Train is a basketball training and education platform that gives you on-demand access to premium basketball courses created by expert coaches and trainers from around the world. Want to get better at blowing by your defender? Learn setup drills with NBA and international pro trainer Marius Williams, or how to use the punch drag with NBA trainer Kerry Darting. Looking to level up your catch-and-shoot skills? practiced space shooting workouts with former lead female trainer for Kobe Bryant's Mamba League, San Dixon. Or if you're just starting out, learn the basics of shooting and finishing at the basket from international champion, three-time Romanian Player of the Year, and Train co-founder, Vlad Moldovaniu. Train has 32 and counting actionable, expert-led, on-demand basketball training courses that teach you exactly how to improve your ball handling, shooting, attacking, and more. For a limited time, HoopHeads listeners get 35% off monthly, annual, and lifetime plans. Just go to gotrainbasketball.com/hoopheads to learn more and sign up for a free 7-day trial.
Topic number three, coaching pet peeves. Go.
Well, I think this is going to ruffle some feathers, I'm sure, and it does even of my coaching staff. I think the most over-practiced thing and the most over-done thing in practice is half-court offense. I think half-court offense, you rarely do it. You rarely run it. And if you do, you run some sort of set to get yourself a quick hit or something like that. So I think half-court offense is the most over-practiced and overdone thing that there is in basketball. And I know some people might disagree with that, but if you come to a Bowling Brook practice, half-court offense gets little to no time. Now, transition offense, we get a lot of time with that. But half-court offense where we just say, hey, you got to run the offense and keep running it, no, I think it's the most overrated maybe aspect of the game for sure.
So you're going into actions out of your transition game when you want to work on quote-unquote half-court offense.
Yes, and we're attacking space and we're attacking advantage, that type of thing. So I just think a half-court offense and running half-court offense, most overdone thing because it rarely happens in games, and that's really any level. I mean, you can go to the NBA, to the college game, to the high school game, half-court offense where you just run offense rarely happens. Now, obviously, there's some teams, particularly at the high school level, that might run some offense and might, especially if they don't have a shot clock, might run offense and offense and offense. And we have some trouble against some of those teams sometimes at Bolingbrook. But I just think it's the most overdone thing. Like, let's see if we can run offense for a minute. Like, what are you doing? So that's just me. And, so that's probably my number one, not my number one pet peeve, but my number one, like, I think coaches just waste time on half court offense.
It reminds me of, we had a conversation back, I don't know, it's been a while now since we talked to Butch Carter, but I remember Butch talking about just trying to make the practice, again, just like everybody, trying to make your practice as game-like as possible. And he went so far as like, okay, if you're running offense on this end, that sometimes you got to run it on the other end. And sometimes, you know, you got to go and run your offense and have things happen. And then the ball goes out of bounds and boom, that's how you got to practice your out of bounds plays. And you got to practice the first 4 minutes after you come out from halftime and have the kids sit for 10 minutes and then get up and practice because we never practice stuff like that. And just, he had a lot of things that kind of go along, not obviously exactly the same as what you were just saying, but similar idea in that you don't want to spend a lot of your practice time doing things and being in situations that you're not going to be in. And then conversely, you want to try to evaluate and look at the game and say, okay, what are situations that we actually are going to face? What are things that we're actually going to see in games? What are situations where a kid's going to have to be sitting on the bench and then boom, jump in and we want him to come in and this kid's a shooter. We want him to knock in a shot and things like that. Like, it was interesting to hear him talk about that and just how important it is to try to make, again, we all talk about, we want the game or want practice to be like a game because that's how the learning best translates. But it even goes further than like, not just doing a drill one on O, but playing a defense, but it's also situational, which I don't think before I had that conversation, I don't think I thought about that very much.
Yeah, I think that is definitely true. There's so much that we do as basketball coaches just because either we've done it that way or we think it gets the kids to go hard or we think that it's helpful that actually doesn't help them in game situations. In a lot of the game situations, you don't know what's going to happen. So that's what your practice should be like. So like, Mike, if you have a team and I have a team, we play one time, then we play a second time. The game's completely different.
Exactly.
So you don't know exactly what's going to happen. So in practice, you should sometimes be putting your kids in situations where you don't know exactly what's going to happen. It's crazy how many times in a timeout I'll say what I think is going to happen, and then I'll say, bottom line is players make plays. You're going to have to make a play here. So if they take this away, make a play. You have got to make a play. And so it's crazy how many times I say that in a timeout, because obviously the other coach, he knows our tendencies and knows what we're going to do. We know their tendencies and we think we know what they're going to do. So the players that are able to make plays, that's the team that's going to have an advantage.
Yep. And you got to have opportunities to do that in practice and put them in spots where they can react, and you can't dictate everything from the sideline, because it just, that does not work. All right. You got one more pet peeve before we wrap up?
Yep. And this one might really, really rub some people the wrong way. I do not care about our warmups, our pregame warmups, the 15 minutes. I don't, as long as when the ball tips off, you're ready to play, it's fine. Whatever you need to do to get ready. Now, obviously, we go through the whole song and dance with two-line layups, and then we do a shooting thing. Then we do a little shell. But I don't necessarily think that it's important that kids get a sweat going, that kids just focus in, you know, all of that stuff. I think, matured in my coaching that it's the individual player's responsibility to be ready wherever, whatever his role is, when the ball tips. And if it helps them to get a sweat going and getting all that, then that's fine. If he's coming off the bench and it's better for him to just kind of jog through stuff and kind of get acclimated to the gym and get some shots up, then that's him. And so, you know, my thought process on warmups has completely changed. And I want to say I don't care about it, but it's more of an individual thing, even though we're all doing the same things. It's a more of an individual thing than it is you have to do this or you have to do that to be ready.
What were you like as a player? Do you remember how you like to warm up?
Yeah. I mean, we did always the same exact warm-ups all the time. And my high school coach, one of the best coaches that I've ever played for, he was a get a sweat going guy. But I was more like, hey, let me just kind of just get a feel for the gym, get a feel for the – you know, what's going on and all of those things. So, you know, I was more like that, I guess you would say. And I'm not saying getting a sweat going is bad. If that gets you ready, then I'm all for it. You know, so my opinion on warmups has really, really changed to more an individual thing, even though we're warming up. And if you come and see our warmups, I mean, we look like most other teams, but I don't really react to, you know, at halftime, one of my assistants might say, well, we're not playing well because we didn't warm up right. No, we're not playing well because we're not playing well. It's not because of how we warmed up. That's just my opinion. So, you know, I get all the guys that say how you do anything is how you do everything. I don't necessarily agree with that. So that's just my perspective from a coach that's won almost 400 games. My whole perspective has changed on that.
Here's what I would say from an individual perspective when I think about myself as a player. Like, yep, in all honesty, the only thing I wanted to warm up was my shot. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I wanted to make sure my shot felt good and that I was ready to shoot the ball when the game started. And yeah, everything else, I didn't have to warm up my defensive stance. I didn't have to warm up my passing. Yes. I didn't have to warm up my back pedals. I didn't have to warm up my passing. None of that stuff really mattered to me except for, can I get shots up? And the honest truth is, yes, I would have been happiest not going through all the drills and whatever else if I could have just had somebody rebounding for me and me taking as many shots as possible in that 15 or 20. I remember there, now everything's 15 minutes in a warm up in high school, at least in Ohio. Yep. But when I played, it was 20. And yep, I remember there was a couple games where whatever teams were late, or we were late getting there, or the other team was late, and we only had 15 minutes. I remember being so mad, like, I need my extra 5 minutes to be able to get those, you know, get those shots up. And then I remember when I was playing at Kent and we'd have assistant coaches standing on the basket, you know, yelling, "Hey, you got to go hard. You know, you got to go faster." And you're just like, can you just let me get ready for the game and not like, can I have 5 minutes where someone's not yelling at me and just so I can get prepared. And it's interesting though. I mean, I think there's obviously the opposite school of thought from what you just presented is, hey, if we're super crisp in warmups, that's going to translate to we're super crisp in the game. And I think that's
what to me, if you're super crisp in warmups, you just got better at warmups.
Right. Exactly. I would agree.
You did a great job on warmups. Good job.
Right. And I think that goes back to two, when you think about practice philosophy, like if I'm going to come in and watch somebody's practice, if they're just doing repeatable drills with no defense and they're showing, wow, look at this guy's footwork, 'cause he can make this move on a cone or he can beat the coach who's just standing there. Okay. That looks great. Like if I'm sitting up in the stands, that looks really impressive, versus I go to Rob's practice and he's got guys playing 2-on-2, but you're only allowed one dribble or this, it's gotta be a certain entry. Like it's not going to look as pretty. And I look at warmups sort of in the same way. And I guess I would lean towards philosophy of, hey, what do you need to do to get ready? Now, if you tell me, hey, I don't need to take warm-up seriously, and in the first 10 games, you're god-awful for the first 4 minutes, well, then you and I might have to have a talk about self-awareness of what goes on with what you're doing in warm-ups. But I think for the most part, players have a pretty good understanding, at least the ones who are serious. Yes. They have a pretty good understanding of what they need to do to be ready to play.
No doubt. I completely agree, and I totally echo what you said. Like, what I'm concerned with is when the ball tips, are we ready to go? And, you know, people get there in different ways, and you're exactly right. If we have 10 straight games where we come out and we're down 10-2, then we might have a pattern. We might need to adjust some things. But typically that's not the case. And people ask me all the time, well, it seems like in the first quarter, your games are always close. Well, yeah, because it starts tied. Of course it's close in the first quarter. Well, why can't you guys get out that is another argument that people like, coach, we weren't ready to go. We were only up 16-14 at the end of the first quarter. Okay. Well, the other team's fresh too. And look, we won by 15. Like, let's. You know, I just think I've done a better job as I've matured a little bit as a coach to, you know, the important things are important and all the other is just all the other. And I've been, you know, cognizant of making all the other just that, just all the other.
And hey, the game's 32 minutes because you're going to wear the other team out with your style of play, right?
That's it. That's well, you know us, and you know how we do it. And, you know, if the score is 26-24 at the end of the first quarter and we're down, we'll take that as opposed to being up 2 and the score is 12-10.
Yep.
You know, it's just how we do things, and it's not right for everybody. And I always say, even at the Arkansas clinic I did 2 weeks ago, hey, my way is not necessarily the right way, the only way, or the way that you should do it. You should just take bits and pieces of what I'm doing if it suits you, and if it doesn't, throw it out the window. So, you know, I'm not here trying to tell anybody they should do it how I do it.
Rob, well said. Jay, welcome back to the triple double, or welcome to the triple double.
I was going to say, get back.
Yes. I mean, we are the triple. Now we need triple. All three of us.
Yeah, we got it. Otherwise, like what Rob and I talked about last time, we were only the double double last week. So, last month. So.
I'm sorry. Next time, I'll hopefully be here and I won't let you.
Hey, you're here, man. You're back. That's all.
I can't. I'm already looking forward to next month. Next month's triple double.
Yep. We're going to get it going. So Rob, thanks so much for joining us again tonight. Really appreciate it. To everyone out there, thanks for listening. Jay, welcome back. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks. Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies. And most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your coaching portfolio guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.